Five, four, three, two, one.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, my giddy aunt, it is Thursday night yet again. And I'm sure it's only Thursday night like yesterday. It is Thursday the... I'm going to have to check. 21st of February 2009, in fact. No, it's not. 2019. New Panic Room episode 132, which is one more than 131 in most ways, I'd say. So, hey, it is. And I don't know what's going on tonight. I've been doing like a million things today, and as usual, I've sat down, and if it wasn't for Xtina, to be honest, I'd be all of it, a bit of a bit of a mess, to be honest. But I think we're going to sort of change it up, I think, a little bit to introduce her this week. Because she has, every time I do the banjo, she gets upset because, you know, she doesn't like to be reminded she's trailer trash, I guess. But so we're going to do a bit of this, I think, to introduce her. How do you like that? How's that? A bit different?
It is different. I like it. The only, you know, I wasn't going to embarrass myself again this week, but I've already brought it up now. I was going to say, it's not Jaws, though, you know, because I still can't believe I did that. You know, I was so excited.
No, I can believe that. To be honest, I can't believe it's not butter. Although, you know, when I grew up in a rough area of Doncaster back in England, and it was where we were from, it was called You Can't Prove It's Not Butter.
I don't believe you, but that's funny.
you didn't know my neighborhood.
Yeah. When we used to do the questions and baked beans or ranch style, it's like, no, ranch style doesn't exist. I don't know what you're talking about, but you sent me a picture.
Sent you a picture. It may be a Texas thing. I don't know, but it's ranch. I think because they put bits of bacon in it. I mean, I'm a bit of a bean. Same with the chocolate, actually. I'm a bit of a bean purist. It's like chocolate. Uh-huh. You know, I like chocolate. Anybody who knows me knows I like chocolate. I would probably sell my children for chocolate, to be honest. But when they put stuff in it, don't put nuts and raisins in chocolate. Don't ever do that, people.
No.
And then you get they're all right. You know, you get with a little fondant center. Just give me chocolate. Uh-huh. Give me big fuck off 500 gram bar of chocolate, and I'm happy. Seriously, I like a nice dark chocolate. I mean, when I say chocolate, I don't mean, you know, the Hershey's crap you eat over here. And I'm not sure what it is. It is not chocolate. I think it's something that is probably better used to insulate space shuttles, because it is just horrible, nasty, disgusting stuff. You know, for proper chocolate, Cadbury's, Galaxy chocolate, Mars chocolate, whatever, anything but bloody Hershey's, to be honest with you. That I could quite merrily sit and eat, and I have done a full 500 gram bar in one sitting. I can do that, without any qualms at all. I have no self-control when it comes to chocolate at all.
You know I'm not a huge chocolate person. It's good and whatever, but I received a lovely, you know, Valentine's last week, and it was truffles, and I do like truffles, and I will not tell, I will not disclose how many I ate at one time, but we'll just say that I don't have any more truffles left, and I think I did.
Well done.
I know. And
I just can't.
So
just how it's safe. If we get every now and then, I raid the English aisle at our local Fiesta, which is a Mexican supermarket, but it has a great English aisle, a great India, it has a whole section of different food, you know, different country foods, and I get plain chocolate, that McVitie's plain chocolate digestive biscuits.
Interesting.
And they are just I mean, because they're obviously they're shipped over here. I mean, they're like $5 for a packet of biscuits. And,
wow.
You know, India and I, we were sat watching a movie. And she said, oh, get here. Because I made the mistake of buying them when I was with her. So she knew they were in. And she knows where I keep them because I always keep my chocolate in the fridge. And she said, oh, can we have some digestive biscuits? And literally, through the course of an hour and a half movie, we demolished the entire packet between us.
It's gone. Yeah.
You know, and when I was a kid, actually, my parents used to ration me. You can have two. You can have two biscuits. That's it. Two. They would give, because they knew. I would just sit and eat. And because being a grown-up, you don't have that filter. I have nobody saying, you can only have two. I want to eat the whole damn packet. I will eat the whole, if I want to eat Branston pickle out of the jar with a spoon, I'll bloody well do it. And I do. I do think that. As I've said to the kids, you know, being a grown-up is shit. I think we can all agree on that, yeah? You know, kid, you spend your entire childhood wanting to be a grown-up and your entire adulthood wanting to be a child again. And I say, just being a grown-up is crap. You know, you say, oh, you don't have anybody to answer to. Well, yeah, you do, like everybody. You know, you get all the responsibility, all the stress, none of the fun. So eating an entire packet of biscuits in one sitting is one of the perks of being an adult.
You know, I saw a meme on Facebook, and it actually says, you know, it said a con of being an adult. No, a pro of being an adult was that you could sit down and eat, you know, 20 cookies if you wanted to.
Yep.
And then it's like, and a con of being an adult is nobody told you that you shouldn't eat, you know, 20 cookies or something like that. You know, it's true because, yeah, nobody could stop me from eating all those truffles. But, oh, my goodness, I was sick. It was kind of worth it, though, because they were really good. But, you know.
Well, the beauty, if you do actually make yourself sick, you know, something like that tastes as good coming back up as it did going down.
And you
get to enjoy it a second time.
Yes,
or you could be like my dog, you know, who he will literally wolf his dinner down, throw it up, and by the time I've gone to get something to clean up again, it's gone. He's eaten it, you know, like.
That's so gross.
I remember that was a great one with the one of the kids said it was a year or so back, and great thing, you sort of thing you get on a sitcom or a meme even, you know, that like, Dad, you know, the dog's thrown up on the floor over there, and then oh, never mind, he's eating it.
It was gone.
And then the upsetting thing is the other dogs come and help as well, you know, so they're all eating off. It's like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, don't do that.
We have not brought up poo in a couple of weeks, I don't think, on the show. And, you know, speaking of the whole vomit thing, which is wonderful to talk about. But, there's five dogs here now, and there were three of them outside going potty, and there was, like, crap in the yard, and they all started to go toward it, and we had to, like, no, get away from that, you know, and, like, what do they want? Why do they want that? I don't know, but they definitely...
Yeah, they do. I had a boxer dog years and years, and I had him from a pup years ago back in England. He was awesome. He was just a big, white, stupid boxer. He was great. And as a puppy, he used to eat his poo. He was great because he'd poo on the carpet, and then it'd be gone. And then because of being a boxer dog, then he'd come to give you kisses, and he'd have it all around his mouth and in his chin. And the thing is, you know, we look at how it's called coprophagia, and it is quite common, and certainly in dogs. And we sort of looked up, how do we fix this? Because it's quite unsafe. It's not nice, really. Although it's handy, because until he's house trained, he's cleaning up after himself. And they said, add pineapple. Put pineapple in his food, and it makes the poo taste horrible. I thought, well,
really?
How do they know? Who found out? And you wouldn't want that job down the factory, would you? Down the because they actually make stuff as well. They make pills. You put it ground up in the food to make the poo. You know, being the dog poo taster. Who discovered that adding pineapple to and if he's listening, please call in. Adding dog pineapple to dog poo makes it. And how much worse could it taste? Dog shit. I mean, how much worse does it need to taste before? Then, I mean, obviously that then brings up the whole pineapple on pizza debate, doesn't it? I mean, if it makes dog shit taste worse than dog shit. But I like it on pizza, so it says
a lot about me, I guess. I love pineapple.
Whenever I have the chance to have a bespoke pizza, I have pineapple anchovies chucked on it because there's just a nice contrast between the two, you know. Anywho, we could talk about. I'm feeling hungry. I had a big Indian meal as well. For me and the kids cooked a big Indian meal this evening, so I'm still hungry. So I no word of a lie, sat down like 10 minutes ago. What have we got on the show this evening?
This evening, we have, let's see, tonight in the Panic Room, we have, who do we have?
You've been posh now.
I know. You know, I'm starting to get like you, where I sit down right before the show, and I feel all frazzled and like, okay, I gotta like focus, and I can't even blame it on wine.
I find a couple of tins of Monster does help. Although it does mean after the show, you see, I retire to my boudoir after the show, and I'm still buzzing. It takes me at least till about, you know, half midnight one to actually manage to sleep. Mm. But it's all the excitement,
I feel. Mm. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Tonight on the show, we have science fiction author Joseph A. Morgis, and we have crime writer Tyson Blue.
Woo! That sounds awesome. What a fun packed show it's going to be. And who is first?
First up, we have, for our first segment, we have Joseph A. Morgis. Woo!
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hello. So are you the guy sat on the side of the road?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me all right?
You're perfect. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, you've got a good reception going on there.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm in downtown San Francisco. It better be. But
Awesome. So, thank you for joining us. Is it Joe or Joseph?
Either one. It's fine.
Well, pick one.
Yeah,
Either one. Either one.
No, pick one. You know, you have to pick one. I'm just,
all right. Just call me. Okay, you're going to be like that, all right.
Yeah.
Just call me Joe,
that's
fine.
I like that. Excellent. So thank you for joining us, Joe. Here to talk to us about your book, United We Fall. Tell us a little bit more about it.
All right. It's a science fiction book about these two alien races that come to Earth trying to get us on their side. And the uniqueness about it is that they're both at odds over a planet they both claim is theirs. And the reason they're trying to get us on their side so that we will reward them if they get us into the community of worlds, which is the larger society of the galaxy. They expect us to reward them with a vote for the planet that they both claim is theirs. Okay, so the planet is called Jex.
I was going to say, this, the planet they claim to be theirs is not Earth. Earth is like they're trying to get the floating vote.
Right. It's kind of like the United Nations of Space. They're trying to get us into this community so that we will earn a vote, because the votes that they've been getting for the last 500 years or so have all resulted in a tie. So they want to get us. They want to get a new member in to break the tie. So that's, and they just happen to choose us. You know, otherwise it would be a boring story.
I think this is reminiscent of George W. Bush and Florida, isn't it? let's have a recount. Let's have another recount. Let's keep recounting. Well,
no,
have one.
No hanging chads here. Yeah. But, no hanging chads. But they've got It's funny. I told the story to an agent, and she just cut me off in the middle of my description, and accused me of writing Star Trek. And I was like, no.
Wow.
like, have you, do you even know what Star Trek is?
Probably not.
Not even close.
No.
Speaking of
Star Trek, I hear a whole bunch of stuff about this new, what is that show, James, that you were watching?
Oh, the Orville.
There
you go.
It is
awesome. It is awesome. Yes.
I have watched a couple of episodes, and I will say that I am not a huge fan. But there's some humor in there, especially with the Bordis guy. I did chuckle, his whole, yeah, there were some funny moments with him. But
it's obviously Seth MacFarlane, who's obviously Family Guy and American Dad. He's a massive science fiction fan. If you ever get a chance to see the Family Guy, they did Family Guy versions of the first three Star Wars movies, and they are brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen them.
But it pretty much picks up. It fills the niche nicely from the original Star Trek series, you know, because that had a lot of humor in it. I mean, sometimes some of the humor feels a bit forced. I think with this second series, they're not forcing it as much. I think he's realized that you don't need to try and make it funny because it's good on it as a science fiction. Funny enough, when I retire to bed after the show, because it's on Thursday night and I DVR it, I will be watching The Orville when I go to bed tonight. and it is. I mean, they have some great characters. The Bortis character, I think, pushes the gay agenda, I think, pretty aggressively on some episodes.
Yeah.
But it's you know, it's good. They've got, you know, characters that you sort of believe in and, you know, root for, and they've got some of the Star Trek elements are there, you know. They've got the holodeck. They don't beam people up and down, which is one thing, but there's a lot of big, heavy Star Trek influence in there. Back to what Joe was saying, you know, they have their version of the Federation, you know, of planets, so I can't remember what they call it now. I think somebody's going to get arrested.
United Federation.
Are you going to get arrested live on air, Joe? That sounds brilliant. That's going to be great. Be a first for the show.
I'm a little concerned as a. Oh, it's not even a cop. It's just a tow truck. Okay, it's
All right.
they're allowed, but they have that little siren because they have priority at rush hour. Anyway, I was a little worried too. I'm looking in my mirror like, oh no, there is a cop coming around the corner. But there's other cars here, and they can tow them first. Anyway, if they tell me to move, I'll have to take off. But that would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's a first for the show.
No, it'd be brilliant. I would love that. You could just... okay.
We can't wait to have you back, Joe.
Oh, thanks. No, but... Woo! Oh, no.
Yes.
Get out of the car, please. All right, no, but, finishing up what I'm saying. So there's these two agents on the planet, and one is trying to go the scientific route, trying to give us gifts and everything to make us love him. And the other one is trying to use force to bring us together, because the whole purpose of the story is the Earth can't be a member of the community of worlds unless we're united as one planet.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, and then, of course, naturally, things go wrong, you know, otherwise, yeah, it'd be a pretty boring story. So, you got to have conflict, right? Otherwise, you know. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we'll do that. And then it'll be like the world's thinnest novel.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Kind of like, trying to think of that, you know, like a hiking movie without any action. You know, he doesn't fall off the mountain. Come on. No, but, but, yeah, so, you know, it all, I can't give away the ending, of course. But,
no, spoiler alert.
Yeah, you know. Oh, yeah, right. I looked up, I sold two copies this week. Yeah, whoopee. Come on, people. No, but...
buy the book, people. Buy it.
You know? I want to see a movie. But... I mean enough for you. That's a little joke. This is actually the second edition. The first edition, it did fairly well. It was... I sold a few copies here and there. And, I made enough to, make a car payment. But...
Excellent.
my intent at the when I started rewriting it for the second edition I wanted to add a little bit of, you know, extra to lead into the next book. And what ended up happening was I went from 75,000 words to 100,000. I ended up, you know, adding more than I expected to. So.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's a little bit more, isn't it?
So, 25,000 words. You can tell a whole few stories in that. But I still like it. So, you know, what the heck.
So it's going to be a series.
Yes. It's called the Jex series. But I don't write that on the cover. I put that separate. You see that on Amazon. But the first one is United We Fall. The second one is called The Will of the Stars, and it's actually a bunch of new characters. So each book is independent from the other. It's kind of like James Bond novels. They're all, you know, they have the same set of characters, but they're all different stories. You know?
Right.
You don't have to read one to understand the others.
Yeah, I mean, how many do you have planned? I mean, have you got a bunch planned out, or is it just, you've got the universe there now?
Right now it's believe it or not, right now it's only four that I have planned.
Wow.
I had originally planned six, but I cut it down to four, so I think it'd be more interesting that way. And then I have another series in mind, a story called Hell's Angel. But that's,
oh, I like that.
That's still in the. I like playing with words. Have you noticed? United We Fall.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like it makes sense. But the point of the title is that by coming together as one, we end up getting screwed because of all these bad things that keep happening between these, you know, these two aliens keep screwing up our planet. So that's why it's United We Fall, because we really shouldn't come together.
I want to hear more. Do you have a reading for us?
Yeah.
Yay.
Turn on my light here. Make sure I don't. I'm sitting in the dark. Okay. All right. You want me to read you some? All right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You all set? All right. Here we go. Okay. With her duffel bag at her feet, Lieutenant Shanti Day sits on a concrete slab, leaning against the mirrored wall at her back. She is at the main terminal, waiting for a ride from her new superior and listening to the planes take off and land. The sun has gone down, leaving only the light of dusk. The streetlight illumination is beginning to take effect. She expected this airport to be packed with tourists from all over the world. She has read much on the subject of Sin City and wonders what makes today special enough for the street population to be sparse. The gates down at the other end of the terminal seem busier, but just barely. Peering through the glass behind her, she sees mostly business people. Straightening up, she dismisses the aberration and consults her shackle for something to do, a game, a book. The 2060 census is still being tallied, but indications are that Las Vegas will top 10 million. As a solitaire hologram hovers in front of her, Shanti catches sight of three men watching her from the gate to her left. Must be the uniform, she thinks, as she dismisses their interest. After 10 minutes and three games of solitaire and two of chess, the eyes on her are starting to become a problem. Where is Captain Folsom? She tries to make out the mumbling and snickers between the men watching her, but they're too far away. She glances behind her at the people inside, wondering if there is a police officer nearby. There is not. As she stands to move to another bench at a gate farther from the three men, one of them follows her, moving quickly to get to her side. Hey, little honey, you work here? She is momentarily taken aback by the question, but she shrugs it off as ignorance. He's obviously never seen the EDF uniform before. Very few have. I'm Lieutenant Shanti Day of the Indian Navy. I'm here on an assignment, she says as she sits back down. With the large, muscular man standing on her right side, she fails to notice the other two approaching from her left until one of them startles her when he speaks. This guy is in his 20s. The youngest among them. Indian Navy? Where's your dot? She corrects herself. Actually, I'm part of the Earth Defense Force. I'm waiting for a ride. Lieutenant Day of the Earth Defense Force. That's going to take some getting used to. The big man sits on her right, close enough to smell, though at the moment she wouldn't mind losing that sense right about now. I can give you a ride, he says as he drools. He wipes his mouth as the other men start laughing with him, his belly shaking like a bowl of jelly on a washing machine. The second man, who has been quiet for the most part, sits on her left side and speaks clearly and with surprisingly good diction, an educated man. I wasn't aware of an Earth Defense Force. Feeling uncomfortable, Shanti tries to make herself smaller by pulling in her arms. It is not until now that she notices that these men have no shackles, not a one between them. It's part of NASA, at least as far as I know. Today is my first day, she says. The big man leans down to read the name on her duffel bag. NASA has a military? He asks, his voice low. Yes, please, I wish to be alone. The young man stands in front of her close enough that his leg is touching her knee. Why? We're just getting to know you. That's the way it is in Vegas, isn't it? What do I know? We're from Chicago. The chuckling begins anew, making her wish she were in her battle dress uniform. The black camouflage would make an effective deterrent, maybe a pistol or machete for good measure. The second man picks up the younger man's line. No need to be rude, darling. We just want a little fun. The big man picks up a small device and says, okay, into it. The second man tries to make her feel at ease. The sound of your voice, he says. The young man, whose breathing has become more rapid, huffs. The only sound I want to hear is moaning. The big man puts away the device he spoke into as he stands, joining his friends in the laughter. Let's go. He grabs her arm and pulls her to her feet. What did I do to deserve this? She asks herself. Shanti has read about Vegas's sex crime wave. Girls are taken off the street, raped and murdered. Things have improved with the advent of shackles, but implementation takes time. She shouts, I am not a prostitute. Let go of me. The big man shoots back, well, it's not like we were going to pay for anything. The second man affirms the plan as he watches a van come from around the corner behind him. She'll make good sport, eh? Shanti raises her shackle to call for help, but the big man covers her mouth, and the young man pulls her shackle arm back. No shackles, bitch. Let's go. We've got a ride to take. Don't let her take it off. It will call the cops. The van stops at the curb in front of them. The driver is hopping in his seat with anticipation and cackling up a storm. Get her in! Get her in! Shanti is being dragged toward the van's sliding door, which the young man has opened. She tries to scream, but the big man's hand is covering her mouth, muffling her cries. There is no one around to help her. She thinks of her training, not so much from the Navy, but from her father when she was a teenager, not so long ago. For a moment, she relaxes, and she is glad she put her heels back on. With her right foot, she kicks the young man in the groin. She breaks free, using her left elbow to the big man, and roundhouse kicks the second man in the head. He goes down hard, losing a tooth or two, courtesy of the concrete. The boy is still down, unthreatening for a while, she guesses. The fourth man has left the van and is approaching with a knife, holding it high. She has only a second, not knowing whether he knows how to wield the blade or not. All indications point to no, as he is holding it wrong. People back up when confronted with a knife. Shanti surprises her attacker by going on the offensive. As quick as she is, she clocks him in the eyes with two swift punches before he can lower the blade. He stumbles backward, blinded, albeit temporarily. The big man, now to her left, pulls a gun from the small of his back. A bad place to keep a gun in close-quarter combat. She grabs the man's gun elbow with one hand, and her finger is on the trigger with the other, in order to guide the barrel of the .22 caliber weapon into position under his chin, pointing it upward. The man with the knife wisely backs off, retreating into the van, while her current prisoner falls to his knees and begs, okay, okay. Shanti smiles. Fortunately for him, she is not a killer. The fourth man is in the driver's seat and revving up the van for a quick getaway. It's an old van and easily identifiable by the rust pattern and colored tires, a fad of the times. Let go of the gun, she commands the fat man, who has started to sob. He obeys without question or hesitation, trembling as he does so. She pushes the barrel of the pistol into the man's crotch. One of the things my father taught me was how to defend myself, How am I doing? Is this good sport? Please, no, he cries, sweat now pouring off his balding head. Lieutenant Day activates the safety and pockets the pistol before delivering a few more choice punches to the man's face, followed by another roundhouse kick to the quiet one, who is charging in once again. He loses another tooth. The young one is still on the ground, sobbing over his crushed testicle if she knows her business.
Oh, I hate to cut you off there. I hate to cut you off there, but that was so good, though. I love the fact that she's a badass. You know, that is one thing when I'm reading a book and the female character is this weak, wishy-washy female. I hate that. I like that Shanti's a badass. That's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, then you'll like Jennifer Kong, too, because she's an ex Chinese Ministry for State Security spy, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Well, you know, Buffy, the vampire slayer, she is like my hero, so I definitely like a good, strong woman, you know. Yeah, don't laugh. Buffy's
seriously,
awesome.
Seriously, Buffy.
Buffy's great. What?
What are you like? You're an embarrassment. You're an embarrassment. You really are.
I love Buffy.
Buffy! I don't watch Buffy, sorry.
Maybe
Xena. How do you think about her, you know?
Now we're talking. Now we're talking. Zena was more about the outfits, to be honest, than anything else for me, really.
She did fill an outfit well. But, the second book's got even a more badass character. Her name is Delia Thorne. So, you know.
You like the badass bitches. I like that.
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, awesome. when I started writing this, I came up with this story back in the 80s, is when I first started thinking of these, you know, the story itself, you know, but I put it away for a while, and then, obviously, it doesn't take 20 years to write a book, but, maybe some people it does.
Right.
But, I mean, I put it away for a long time, and then I come back to it, and it's like, okay, I've got, you know, all these great characters, and I start making it, you know, I flesh it out a little bit. And by this time, of course, you've had your Sarah Connors and your, you know, Rey from Star Wars and all these other badass women. And it's like,
Ripley,
great.
Ripley.
Yes.
Yeah, Ripley, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, who can forget Aliens? But, here I am thinking I'm ahead of the game, and now I'm like, you know, behind, well, not behind, but I'm like, I'm in it, you know, I'm in the middle.
Right.
So...
They're still not enough. I mean, it's still very much biased, you know, to obviously, you know, the guys. But it's nice to see, you know, kick-ass women. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, I am all anxious to do 11 questions. It's like one of my favorite parts of the show. So, Joe, would you do 20? Ha! That's a lot of questions. Would you like to do 11 questions?
Far too many questions.
There you go. Sure.
Okay. Here we go.
Even if you call it 20 questions.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay. Ooh. Number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
Oh, boy. Guilty pleasure. I really don't have one. I was going to say sad movies.
Sad movies? Aw. Yeah, you like sad movies.
I know, I'm a big sap. But that's about it, yes.
That's a good answer, though. I don't hear that very often. And you know what? That stumps me, that question. It really does to me, too, because I'm like, what do I feel guilty over? And I don't know either.
You know, I don't have much to feel guilty for.
Yeah, exactly. what do you prefer,
the mountains or
the ocean?
The mountains, definitely. I go hiking in Yosemite and... every year. This year I'm going to Sequoia National Park, which is, for those who don't know, is near Fresno, California, in the valley. And the Central Valley of California.
Now I say my answer is mountains, you know, and I love to look at them. But, you know, you say, yeah, go hiking. I've tried hiking, and I was scared. I couldn't move. Like, my kids took me, and there's a place back where we used to live that they would go hiking, and they took me one time, and I was frozen. I could not move a muscle. I couldn't go. And then I felt
What were you scared of? Did you see a mouse or something?
No, it was the heights. I was scared. Heights. I thought it was gonna like fall off the side and like I don't know. I was terrified.
Just put one foot in front of the other.
So, you know, as bad as I want to be badass Buffy, I just
Let's move. You're just making a show of yourself now. You really are embarrassing. Moving on.
Okay.
Question five.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
Ham, smoked.
Yay! You didn't say turkey.
That is a good lunch meat. Good lunch
meat.
It is.
What does everyone say? Turkey.
You know, we get a lot of turkey answers. Surprisingly,
turkey. Turkey is the worst lunch meat. To be honest, it's just bland. It's bland rubbish. It really is.
That's what you gotta add some to it, like ham.
Yes.
I mean, if you use turkey as a filler, you know, just to fill you up, you're okay. But, you know, then you gotta add something to make it taste good.
Well, it's a nice bit of low-fat protein, but, you know, you need to have some pickle with it or just anything, really, to give it some flavor because it's just nothing otherwise.
You can't just have turkey and cheese.
Turkey and chocolate. Turkey and chocolate. Now we're talking.
Oh, yeah, I heard you talking about
I would eat
chocolate.
That.
Yeah.
I would totally eat that.
I've got some. Have you tried Ghirardelli brownies? I love those. That's my chocolate fix right there.
Ooh.
I guess you'd call that a guilty pleasure, but you know I don't do that.
Okay, if it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
No.
Thank you. I'm with you. I would not do it. Great. James, on the other hand,
I was going to say something, but I better not.
Why? Now you have to. You can't put it out there and then stop. You have to go. You have to say it.
Well, it depends on what you mean by eating human flesh. You know, what's your name? No, I'm kidding.
We mean like barbecuing it up or something. You know, that's
yeah.
Just gross. Like yeah, I can do it.
That's what I mean by twisting words. Go ahead.
Exactly. Let's see. Oh, here we go. This is a good one. Have you ever been pulled over for a traffic violation? Almost, right?
I'm thinking about 5 minutes from now. I might be. Both times in Nevada for some reason. You know, when you have a sheriff of a very small town, a town of about, you know, 20, and it's called Hawthorne, and it's like it's a little town south of Reno, and it's in the middle of nowhere. It was 2 a.m. I pull over. I want to check my map, make sure I know where I'm going. I'm trying to find Highway 95. And if anyone in Nevada is listening, they're probably nodding their heads right now. But I'm sitting there. I'm looking at my map. And I've been looking at the map now for like 5 minutes. And the sheriff pulls up behind me. Or at least it was a sheriff's car. Anyway, he pulls up behind me, comes up to my window, knocks on my window, I roll the window down. And he says, I pulled you over for going 30 in a 25 zone.
Looked
at him. I said, I beg your pardon? I've been sitting here for 5 minutes. You didn't pull me over.
Wow.
You know, and then he proceeds to write me up a ticket of $117. And I'm like, what can I do? I can't challenge it because it would cost more to go back out there to challenge it than just to pay it. So that's how they make their money. They rip people off. But you know.
That's awful.
But that's my cop story. I have another one, but no time for that. Go ahead.
Next time we have you on, you'll have to tell us the next one. Here we go. Android or Apple? What do you prefer?
Well, I'm using Apple right now, and it's holding up pretty well, so we'll go with Apple. I'm a pretty good Apple. I'm sorry. Did I insult you? I'm a pretty loyal customer when it comes to things like, you know, phones. And like, you know, even though sometimes Apple screws up, I'll still buy the next one, you know, what the heck.
Yeah.
Although right now I'm using an older model. But I mean, like, I've got a Mac, you know, laptop. I've got, that's about it when it comes to Mac or Apple. But I mean, there are other brands. Like, there are certain brands that I always stick with, even though, you know, they screw me over. Like, Hertz. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they make mistakes, but I still stick with them. I don't want to give them free plugs on the air, but go ahead.
Right. Okay, which franchise do you prefer? Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
Hellraiser.
Oh, really? There's one for you, James.
Yay! I'm excited.
I, you know, Pinhead, Chatterbox, those guys, you know, yeah.
Yeah, James.
Yeah, did
loves
you
that.
Did you did you see the most recent one?
No. I only saw the first two. I didn't even see the third one.
Oh, really?
But,
the most recent one is, I can't remember, is it Retribution? Well, anyway, it's probably the closest to the original two of all of the many, many sequels. I'd recommend it. It's good.
Okay.
It's good.
I'll check it out.
I'm a Michael Myers girl, so Michael Myers for me, but yeah. But you did score points. You did score points with James, though, because he's definitely...
Yes,
the,
you did. Well done.
Yeah.
Oh, good choice.
Cool. I can sleep tonight. No, but...
exactly.
No, but it's funny. There was a guy, when I was in the service, there was a guy whose his name was Michael Myers, and, of course, he got teased.
Nice.
He didn't look anything like Jim Kirk, but...
No. roller coasters, yay or nay?
Nay.
No.
No.
I want to say yay because I used to love them, but I don't know anymore. I've turned into a big wuss,
yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. Oh. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. No.
Okay, let's see. Moving along. Give
moving
me
along.
One. Right. Exactly.
Moving on.
Give me one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I'm sorry, what? A non-what?
Non-writing. So non-writing related, something, you know, something not to do with writing.
Okay. Oh, well, I already mentioned backpacking.
You did.
Well,
you did.
It's backpacking.
Yeah.
I also like to play tennis. I play video games. Not multiplayer, though. I don't like playing other people. They cheat. No, but...
They do. They do cheat. I have to say, real quick, you know, shout out to your cousin who I'm going to say he cheats at Mortal Kombat. So he doesn't really. But anyway.
He beats you all the time, I guess. Okay.
Exactly.
No, I play strategy games like Civilization, you know, things like that. Simulators, like submarine simulators, you know, things like that. Or SimCity. I used to play shooters, but, you know, when you pass 50, your hand starts to... rebel against you. Kind of like Evil Dead 2, you know, when his hand gets home. Go ahead.
Right. I was going to say, what is your least favorite part of the writing process?
This. No.
Oh, wow.
No. Marketing. Basically, marketing. Because it's like, you know, you have to come up with fresh ways to promote it and everything. And it's
Definitely. Well, I hate to say this is the end of the first segment, and it was a pleasure to have you on, though, and you have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, sure. I will.
You hear that?
Yeah, thanks. Great.
Yeah, sure, yeah. A little measly half hour. No, I'm kidding. No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Let us know, or tell us real quick where we can find you online. Like where we can find your
book. Well, I don't have a website. I've got just a Facebook page that's Jammo Publishing. But basically, the Amazon page, if you look me up on Amazon, under United We Fall and my name, I guess I'll spell my name. It's Morgus, Morgos. Because there's quite a few books called United We Fall. It's kind of funny. I didn't realize that when I made the title. But I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. There's like 10 of them here, you know. But, mine's pretty obvious when you see it. It says the Jex series and everything. And,
I will get your links put up on our Facebook page. So if anybody wants to stalk you, then go there and do that. And again, thank you so much for coming on. And I will be bugging you to come back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you get home without being arrested.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Traffic is still backed up about 5 blocks. This ain't going to clear up for another hour anyway.
There you go. Okay, well, have a safe trip back, and we will speak to you next time.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Okay, yeah, and we will be right back after these commercials. We'll be right back.
radio show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
We should have a show sometime where we just play music. That was a great Elvis Costello, The Attractions, one of my favorite bands of all time there. And we should do that and just play music. A whole hour and a half of jolly good tunes.
Well, you know, I was thinking definitely on if we're ever sick or tired or something like that, we can definitely play some tunes, and then like maybe every couple of tunes we just stop for a few seconds and like, you know, talk some nonsense, because that's always fun. We seem to be able to, talk a lot about nonsense.
That is true. That is true. But yeah, we should just do nonsense. Maybe do a spin-off show and call it Nonsense and Tunes, and just do that. And just talk bullshit and play.
good music because, you know, we...
I would listen to that.
We do. I mean, it's funny. I mean, it's a few, you know, I get a lot of comments. It's actually not all good, I have to say, about the eclectic music we play on the show. I have a very... Because I'm sort of, you know, manager in charge of music, as we all know, as you can probably tell. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a wide, you know, I don't really fit any particular, you know, I either like a tune or I don't, you know. And it ranges from classical, of course, by classical, I mean, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino, that's classical music too. To be fair, my enjoyment of music sort of stops sort of, you know, mid-80s, because there was nothing good ever produced from 1985 onwards, to be honest, really.
Yeah.
You know, it all sort of finished at that point. It was funny, actually, they back in England, they had the Brit Awards, which is like, I guess, the equivalent to the Grammys, I guess, over here, is it? Or is it? No, it's music, isn't it? So whatever the equivalent to music is over here, the MOBO Awards or what have you. And I was reading through, you know, reading who's won what, and I didn't really, the only one I recognised, funnily enough, was like the, you know, the lifetime achievement thing. It's somebody who'd been around since Adam was alive. And like, all these people, Ed Sheeran, I reckon, because obviously Ed Sheeran's sort of global, and he actually won sort of global superstar award. All the others, no idea. Who are these people? Who are these people, I thought? You know, he's just like... Maybe I'm just getting old and out of touch. I don't. But having said that, I mean, you know, music over here, you know, I could have a very, you know, lucid conversation with any 9-year-old or 10-year-old about music, you know, because that's where I am now. You know, Meghan Trainor and Ariana Grande and
all the others,
Jessie J.
Before I moved, the only radio station that would come in was, you know, basically the top 40 stuff, the pop, and I am a rock and roll girl at heart, so it just, and there was one time I was in the car, and I heard a song come on, and I got excited, because I was like, I like this, this is a good song, and I sat there thinking, oh my God, it's going to be somebody I'm going to just be embarrassed to admit I like, and it was, it was, what the freak, one of those boy bands that I just, when I heard it was by them, I was like, oh my God, no, I didn't. I mean, it was so
bad. Yeah, it's from that. My daughter had, she'll just come out, I want such and such a tune, and we'll put it on, get it on iTunes for her and put it on a phone, or on the iPod to play in the car. And I said, this is good. It's not, and it was Justin Bieber, and it was really good. And then she's played a few, and some of his songs are great. You know, I mean, he's a complete twat, to be honest with you,
but
some of his children, and she's there, and they said, oh, this is great, who is it? Oh, it's just a bit, okay. But yeah, Meghan Trainor is a firm favourite, and Nicki Minaj, which is a bit of a worry.
So you have to get your cool card revoked if you like Justin Bieber. You just, but you know, I'm right there with you, because the band, it was One Direction. I heard the song and I was like, this is
good. You know,
good.
I could not name one of their songs. I mean, I'm sure they all just sound the same, to be honest. I mean, they're just manufactured. I mean, obviously they were created on the X Factor over in England, you know, and it's like, well, there. Although one of them, Tomlinson, is actually from Doncaster, which is where I'm from. So there you go. So that's me, him, and Jeremy Clarkson, all from the same town. So what a great town. A little nod to Doncaster there. But, and while we're nodding, doing nods to people, I haven't nodded to her for a while. Our listener over in California, who stays up all night making croissants, apparently. Which I guess, you know, if you've got to have a hobby, you've got to have a hobby. So if you're still awake, my dear, thank you for listening. She does make a mighty fine cake. She sent me some sort of mini cakes. Although, to be fair, the two words mini and cake don't belong in the same sentence, to be honest. It's cake. It's got to be. She's going to do cakes. It's cake, right? And they were just spectacular. But because I like cake, I do like cake, to be honest. And have a wild guess. I bet you can't guess. You know, we should have a writing competition. guess guess Jim's favorite cake flavor?
I'm going to say chocolate.
Oh, you see, you've spoilt it now. You've spoilt it for everyone. A little bit obvious, that one. Well, we do. We buy. I mean, I like to think that, you know, I'm a bit of a chef, you know, and we're going to make a cake. And to be fair, it's a, you know, Betty Crocker packet mix, and we get a sort of like the double chocolate mix, and then a double chocolate fudge topping and fulfilling, and then chocolate sprinkles on top, and just like,
you know,
just like eating a whole
birthday.
Slab of chocolate. Mm-hmm.
My son had his birthday last month, and he wanted a spice cake. That's what he wanted.
A what?
So a spice cake. It's just
spice cake.
Yeah, it's just a flavor, and I don't happen to really like it too much. But he had spice cake. We all had a piece of it on his birthday, and then the whole rest of the cake he ate by himself. You know.
Wow. But
yeah,
I tell you one thing I don't like, as much as I like cake, carrot cake. Just don't make cake from carrots. That is just disgusting. People who make carrot cake really should be shot, to be honest. Should be shot in the head. It's horrible. Nasty, horrible. It's just like, no. No.
You know, now I'm thinking we should like switch out our questions about the lunch meat and ask, what their favorite cake is. Yeah,
I know. Keep the lunch meat one in there. But I think a cake related question would be. It's funny the lunch meat question is probably the most divisive question we've got. You see, than would you eat human flesh? You know, I mean the lunch meat debate. Yeah. We could have a whole show. We should just dedicate a whole show to lunch meat.
Lunch meat.
I think we should do that. Yeah, we could call it the lunch meat show.
I'm all for it.
So, hey. I presume we have another guest.
We do.
Do we?
We do.
Join in.
I'm so glad you didn't say, speaking of lunch meat, because I thought that's where you were going to go. And I'm like, oh, please don't.
I thought it. I did think that. You know me all too well.
Yes. But yes, we have another guest on the show. We have a horror and crime writer, Tyson Blue.
Good evening. Yes. Hello.
Good evening.
Hey, Tyson, how are you, sir?
Not bad. You?
Good. I'm fine. I'm on my second tin of Monster, so I'm pretty manic right now. So I can I'm gonna be sat up watching the Orville till those small hours. I can see that happening.
Oh God.
So, Tyson here to talk to us about Gunfight at the Golden Gator. You are in the anthology A Time for Violence, as am I. So, welcome, anthology mate. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
We have some sort of exclusive club. I'm really looking forward to getting to read everyone's story. It's going to be a fantastic anthology. When is it out? Do we know when it's out? Has it got a publication date yet?
May 1st is what they're saying now.
Fantastic.
I hope that's accurate. I'm excited about this one. Some of the talent that's in this anthology is amazing. Some of these people are legendary.
The table of contents is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Because I think Lansdale's in there. I think there's Chisma, obviously Longmore. I mean, I've heard he's good.
He's great.
But it is. I mean, it's Chris Roy is involved in compiling this, and he sent over the TOC, and it's like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, I am not worthy, I thought.
Wow.
I was kind of wondering too. I was hoping they would come out before they wake up and say, "What's this thing doing here?" But
nice.
No, but it's then you've got Peter Leonard, who's the son of Elmore Leonard, and that really is an impressive.
Mm-hmm. I like the title.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's got a really great title.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is excellent. So, Gunfight at the Golden Gator sounds intriguing. Tell us a bit more about it, Tyson.
Okay. It's actually a I'll start at the beginning. Andy Roush, who is was one of the co-editors, has bought a couple of things from me in the past, and he had mentioned this anthology, and so I asked if he had any room in it for me. And so he described what he was looking for in very general terms. It was like, you know, edgy stories with a soupçon of violence. And this story is actually the last chapter of a novel I was working on longer ago than I want to admit, called... The working title was The 24 Hours of Deputy Dog, and it was sort of loosely based on some of the experiences I had when I was actually a deputy sheriff in Georgia back in the mid to late 70s, about 1976 to 78. And the last chapter was the only one that actually got written down. For some reason, I wanted to start that project at the end and then work up to it from the beginning. And the Golden Gator at the title was a real place in the county that was in our patrol area, and a lot of the history about it in the story is actually true. And they used to have brawls down there on a regular basis. It was such a pain in the neck to go, you know, to have to go down there on a Saturday night. It was you and one other person that have to go down and stop this fight with 50 or 60 people. And, it was always kind of edgy and dangerous. And, I kind of wish something could happen. We could just clean the whole place out. And in my book world, we got to.
Nice.
So I couldn't find, I have no idea where the manuscript of the novel is. So when Andy invited me to contribute, I decided to rewrite it from scratch. So I sat down on a Saturday morning and started on it. And 3 hours later, it was done. And I sent it off and they accepted it, and it's coming out. I'm really excited and kind of proud to be in this anthology. It's just to be in there with all these other really great writers is it's
an honor. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And it never that never wears off, no matter, you know, how many times you appear in print. But.
So. This is a off topic here, Tyson. I was stalking you when we were, you know, having you on the show, and it said that you were you live in Macedon, New York. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know how to pronounce it right. I'm impressed.
Well, I grew up in upstate New York. I lived in a little town called Newark, and I'm sure you know Newark, right? No,
you're from
Newark.
Yeah.
I'm from Newark.
Huh? Wow, small world. I go there all the time.
So, what's the weather like?
Right now, well, today it was unseasonably warm. It was like up into the into the 30s and 40s. So the snow we've been getting the last few weeks is starting to melt, and. But I'm sure it'll get cold again.
You know, I remember growing up in New York, upstate, that you know, people have that seasonal depression like thing, you know. For me, I always got depressed when the thaw happened, you know, like springtime would come and I would get depressed then. That's so weird. I can't even explain it, but I loved the winter. Yeah. I did.
I lived in Georgia for 17 and a half years, and all I wanted to do was get out. I mean, it's all the sun's out all the time. It's hot. It's
Yes. You know, I lived in Florida for most of my adult life, and God, it was, you know, the town that I lived in right before I moved to Tennessee was it was like living in hell. I lived in hell, Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, just hot all the time.
That's how we felt about Georgia. But,
yeah.
But no, I feel the same way. My wife does. I do. I always say summer, winter is our reward for putting up with summer.
I'm with you. Yeah. Now, see, I have a great medium here, I think, in Tennessee, because it's not mm-hmm. crazy cold,
yeah.
but it's not crazy hot. It's like perfect. It is. So. But I thought it was interesting when I saw, you're from Macedon. I was like, oh my gosh, it's mm-hmm. so close to, So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they kind of adjoin each other, but.
So. Okay, James, back to books. I want to hear more
yeah.
about the gunfight at the Golden Gator. And do you have a reading for us?
For about 5 minutes or so, I can just start at the beginning and go to the five yeah. minutes, or I could almost
sure.
read the whole story.
Hey,
but,
yeah.
well,
okay.
Or I'll just, get to a suspenseful part and then stop, so listeners will have
Thanks.
To buy the book. Well, I sent you a copy, but you know how it ends. Okay. Well, then, let's see. Roger James piloted the Larry County Sheriff's Department vehicle designated 1264 southeast on Highway 441, headed back into Shannon, the county seat, after a swing through the northwest part of the county. The clock on the radio read 3:10 a.m. James's riding partner, Tim Foster, sat in the passenger seat, his right arm out the roll-down passenger window as the car rolled through the warm, muggy July night. They were headed back to the sheriff's office after a routine patrol to grab a few winks before turning things over to the next shift at 8 a.m. "I guess you heard about the latest from the Mullis brothers," James drawled. Tim hadn't heard. He knew who the Mullis brothers were. Everyone in Larry County law enforcement did. The Mullis brothers, Skeeter and Woodrow by name, were, like the Dukes of Hazzard, just good old boys. But when it came to the never meanin' no harm part, they broke the mold. Rape, drugs, guns, prostitution. If there was a crooked dollar to be made at it, the Mullis boys were into it, along with their cadre of redneck thugs. The southern part of the county was their kingdom, the way they saw it. They ruled the roost from the Golden Gator, a sun-faded yellow pole barn just north of the county line, which offered drinks and dancing every Friday and Saturday night, an often volatile combination that sent deputies and or state patrol officers down there to clean house. The Gator had been there under one name or another, in one form or another, since the 1920s, when the first wooden building had been thrown up on the south side of Alligator Creek, which had at that time been the county line. Legend had it that the Larry County Sheriff at that time, anxious to have the club's revenue, it sent a couple of deputies to uproot the county line signs and set them up about 500 feet further south down the road, putting the building in Larry County. A subsequent lawsuit had been decided in the sheriff's favor. The Mullises were always there when trouble hit, speaking politely but with a sneering smirk plastered across their faces all the while. They'd managed to always put a few people between themselves and a provable case so that neither of them had ever darkened a jail cell door until last week, when Woodrow had been pulled over by Roger on 441 South for speeding and had been caught with a sandwich bag full of cocaine in the passenger seat of his car. He'd made bail. Money wasn't a problem for the Mullis crew, but the case was a solid one, and Woodrow was looking at a nice stretch in prison if there was anyone to testify against him. "Seems old Woodrow done figured out that if I'm not around to testify against him in court, he'll go free," James explained. "So word is him and old Skeeter's put a hit out on me." "Well, that makes my heart go pit-a-pat, me sitting here in the car with you," Tim said. "Any idea when this might happen?" The car headed into Shannon proper, passing the Waffle House and the liquor store, then cruising past the Toyota dealership and starting the left turn into the traffic circle, which ran around the Larry County Courthouse. James said, he broke off as the radio squawked to life. 1264, said Lucius Cole, who was working the radio. "Got a call about a disturbance down at the Gator. Caller says they're tearing the place up. Go ahead." "Go ahead" sounded more like "yid." James scooped the microphone in one beefy paw and thumbed the switch. 1264, we will respond. He racked the mic and floored the accelerator. The police interceptor motor roared beneath the hood as the car zoomed completely around the courthouse and sped down the main drag, gathering speed as it went. Tim flicked on the lights and siren. In the middle of town, James cut the wheel sharp left, and the car skidded to follow 441 as it veered east, then slewed again as the road turned right to head south toward the county line. There was hardly any traffic at this time of night, so James was able to open the car up. As the speed headed toward 90, the roof began to pop, so both deputies rolled up the windows. "Shotgun loaded?" James asked. "I'll see," Tim replied. "Try not to blow the roof off," James chuckled, "or shoot me." Tim half turned and pulled the gun down off the rack behind the front seat, making sure not to touch the trigger. He grabbed a shell from a box in the glove compartment and pushed it in. The magazine took two more before it was full. Tim checked to make sure the safety was on and placed it back in the rack. The car left the city limits of Shannon and headed on into more open country, blasting over I-16 and continuing south. The car bounced lightly over bumpy places in the road. Even at speeds in excess of 120, the Gator was 15 minutes or so away. Tim said, "You think this has anything to do with what we were talking about a few minutes ago?" James mulled that over a moment. "Nah," he finally said, "probably just another Friday night at the Gator." He thought a moment more, then spoke again. "Still, it wouldn't hurt to have some help." He picked up and keyed the mic again. 1264, he said. "Yeah," Lucius came back. "We got any other units in the area can back us up on this call? 1263 is over near Troutland County. I can send them down there. Let's just have them stand by for now. Anybody else?" Lucius thought a moment. 1265 is on a call in Dexter right now," he said. "I can head them your way when they finish up." "Sounds good," James said, racking the mic and putting both hands back on the wheel. "When we get there, I'll take the shotgun and see if I can quiet the crowd down," James said. "You keep your sidearm ready, just in case." Jim loosened the strap that held his Colt Python in place. Python, a 357 Magnum, was a big gun, and loaded as it was with hollow point rounds, could crack an engine block and would definitely do some damage to a crowd of rednecks. The car roared through an intersection with a small store on one side and a house on the other. There was a concrete slab in front of the house on which a man in a strappy T-shirt sat watching television set on a white steel table, nursing a can of beer. He glanced around as they went by, blue lights flashing, then turned back to whatever he was watching. There was a crackle of static from the radio, then a new voice spoke. 1264, this is GSP. James keyed the mic and spoke to the Georgia State Patrol radio operator. GSP, Gied. "We've been monitoring your traffic," the voice said, cool and authoritative. "We've got some cars down your way, wondering if you want some backup." "It wouldn't hurt," James answered. "If nothing else, we might need the back seats to bring some folks back to the jail." 10-4, GSP said. "We'll have met over your way. GSP out." 54 out, James replied and hung the mic up. "Never hurts to have him on call," James said to Tim. He was nervous. Tim did a quick mental inventory of his other equipment. There was a can of mace in his holster on the left-hand side of his utility belt and the slapjack in his right back pocket. The small, shot-filled leather cudgel could lay a man out cold with one blow if properly applied. He reached down and fingered the Tonfa-style nightstick, which lay on the seat beside him, a short handle projecting from its side angle toward Roger. They were now about 10 minutes away from the Gator. Tim turned to James. "Should we wait for 1263 before we head in?" James thought a minute, rubbing his jaw. "No, let's check things out first, then see if we need to wait for anybody." Tim nodded and picked up his hat. He placed it on his head, making sure the strap was in the back so no one could grab it and pull him off balance. The car topped a small hill, and they could see the Gator on their right across the bridge. James began slowing down as they crossed Alligator Creek and pulled into the parking lot. By the light of one security light on the utility pole in the dirt lot, the deputies could see a teeming mob of about 30 people milling around something that was happening in the middle of the group, about 20 feet from the door of the club. There were fists flying, but so far no weapons could be seen. James put the car in park and killed the siren. He left the lights on and turned on the roof-mounted spotlights, which shed a harsh, glaring light over the scene, which both gave them a better look at what was going on and also dazzled anyone who turned to look at them. He reached behind him and grabbed the shotgun, flicking off the safety with his thumb as he went. "Get out and get ready on your side," James muttered under his breath to Tim as he opened the door and stepped out. Holding the slide with one hand, he racked around into the chamber with a distinctive double clack sound that could put a stop to a fight faster than anything either man had ever seen.
Oh, I'm going to have to stop you there. I'm so sorry, too, because you were reading that so well.
That was
getting
good. I have to say, I love the detail. Yeah, I love the detail you put into that. It was like being there. It was brilliant. I like that.
Thank you.
Your resume
well
was
done.
Good.
Well done.
You should look into doing audiobooks. I swear you got a great voice.
Thank you.
You could,
I've
yes.
thought about that actually.
You should do it.
Yeah, and you did the accents really well as well. Yeah, you should consider that.
Yeah.
You should consider
yeah.
it.
I've thought about it. A friend of mine, another writer, Chet Williamson, you may be familiar with, does a lot of audiobooks.
No, we're just getting into the audiobook sort of realm at the moment, you know, and we're just learning
mm-hmm.
what's what and what have you. But I mean, it's not something I could do. I mean, I think any book read with my accent, unless it was specifically set in Yorkshire, like, you know, The Full Monty, for example, would just be, I'd just ruin it.
It would be kind of fun to hear this story, though.
Wouldn't it just? Yeah. Well, it's funny, actually. I guess you're familiar with The Full Monty, which was set in Sheffield, which is where my family's roots, my grandparents were actually from Sheffield. And I understand in certain parts of the States, they actually subtitled it because the accents were that fit. And I get it here, people struggle to understand me, which is odd for me, but you know. one of the funniest things to see is me trying to have a conversation I'm in Texas, a lot of sort of Mexican people, you know, Mexican accent, me trying to talk to my son's girlfriend's parents, because they don't talk a lot of English, very, very strong Mexican accent, we just end up sort of waving our arms around at each other and smiling a lot, and
wow.
nobody knows who's saying what. No one knows.
No. I have to admit, the first time that the first time I talked to you, the first time you were on the Panic Room way back then, I do remember having to really pay close attention. So I knew, you know, to make out everything. And now it's not even, you know, it's funny. We have other people come on the show and they have these, you know, these really cool accents and stuff. And I just take for granted your accent. Now it's horrible. I can't believe I do it. You should just, you know. I hear it so often now. It's not strange anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's I'm just boring now. I'm
no,
just
I don't
boring
know.
Now. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I've lived all up and down the East Coast. I grew up in New Hampshire. I live in New York now. I spent a lot of time in Georgia. And so, I've heard all kinds of accents. And The Full Monty is one of our favorite movies. But I've never seen it subtitled. I mean, it's English, after all. I mean, it's not like Trainspotting. But
well, obviously Trainspotting was, obviously set up in Glasgow, which is a different...
Right.
We had Kevin J. Kennedy on the show a while ago, and he's got a very strong Glaswegian accent. I actually have friends from, and there's one guy I worked with many, many years ago when I worked for Toyota, and I struggled to understand him. He had a very, very thick, broad Glaswegian accent, and you really had to focus on what he was saying.
Yeah,
and the more I used to go drinking with him, and the more drink he got, the broader he got, and the less you understood him, you know.
Yeah, one of the other things that I do is I play bass drum in a bagpipe band, and one of our drum majors, he was a piper as well, but he was from Glasgow, I saw, pretty much the same experience you had. The more he had to drink, the thicker his accent got.
Yeah. I think that happens to everybody. I guess when I've had a few, that my accent will just get thicker and thicker and thicker. And, you know, if I'm talking to my friends back in England, again, I will revert back to broad Yorkshire very, very quickly. Very quickly indeed.
I've done that too. Once, when I was in law school, I'm an attorney in my day job, and I was working in Savannah, Georgia, in a program where we were helping out people who had had their benefits taken away during the Reagan administration. And we were, I was staying with a Catholic priest. He was from Ireland. And when I talk with people, I kind of fall into whatever accent they're using. And I say, I'm not making fun of you. It's just this thing that happens. And sort of had to explain it to them. That's why when I lived in Georgia, I talk like this. And then when I go up to New Hampshire, my eyes drop off and everything. It's just like,
wow.
Hi, I'm from nowhere.
I am the worst with accents. In my head, I have it down. Like, I can totally do this. I can say this in this amazing accent. And then I try, and it's so bad. I'm like, wow, what made you think you could do that? Because I just can't. So, no, this is it. Although I have to say, from being in Tennessee for as long as I have, I'm trying really hard not to say things like y'all, you know? And the boyfriend loves, you know, good Southern accent. And so he just smiles if I accidentally, you know, say y'all or something. I'm like, no, it's you guys. It's not y'all.
Yeah. No, obviously from where we are, my daughter, I mean, she's grown up speaking Texan, and it's just y'all. You know, I'm going to do this with y'all. And, oh, it just grates so much. It's just... she is just broad Texan.
His robot voice that happens every... You know, I think we should name the robot voice. We should give him a name so that I can introduce him when it starts to do that. Because I can't figure out if it's like a demon or if it's a robot voice, but it's one of those. And it, without fail, every single week, about this time is when it starts. So I'm going to think really hard this week and come up with a name for the demon. But... we are just about out of time for our show, Tyson, and I want to thank you so much for coming on, and we had a great time with you. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, I'd be delighted to. Just anytime.
Awesome.
I've got a lot of projects in the works, and so have a good excuse.
Great.
Got a lot of Stephen King stuff in the works, and I'm doing a... As a change of pace, I'm doing an essay for Steve Spignesi's upcoming book about Elton John. And
that's interesting.
And some more Andy Rausch stuff and a couple of Stephen King-related projects, one of which I can't talk about yet. But
we've had Andy on the show. He's great. Yeah. Tell us where we can find you online.
I have a blog that I haven't done anything with it in about 2 years. It's called Needful Kings and Other Things. You can find it. It's an online version of the print column I used to do for Cemetery Dance years and years ago. And that's about it. I have a Facebook page. It's my name. And those are about the only two places. Although if you run a web search of my name, I think I come up in a couple of places. There's a if you read French, I did an article for a magazine in France one time, a King-related article, and that shows up for some reason. That's usually the first thing people find. But those are about the main places. Although I haven't done a new Needful Kings column in quite a while.
I will get your links put up on our Facebook page. So if anybody wants to go there and stalk you, they can do that. And thank you again for coming on the show. And this is the time of the night when James would tell me to say goodnight, Xtina. So goodnight, Xtina.